Oliver Callan on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Get Set Go. Get comprehensive car insurance today at getsetgo.ie.
Good morning, it's Dermot Whelan here, sitting in for Oliver. It is Thursday, the 6th of November. I'm with you until 10 a.m. Let us know what you're thinking in the usual ways. You can text us 51551. You can WhatsApp, as always, 087-032-3232. Or send us longer thoughts if you're in one of those moods. You want to get them down on paper, or at least onto the old laptop. You can email oliver@rte.ie. Anyone else find the weather kind of weird? You know, when you come out the front door and you're like, it's strangely mild. It's kind of unnerving. Hope it's nice wherever you are. And if there's a bit of fog and rain, that it's lifting. We have a really interesting show for you today. Frontline worker Margot Noonan has spent 25 years nursing and 12 of those supporting victims through the HSE's Sexual Assault Treatment Unit in Cork. It's somewhere we all hope that no one we love ever ends up, but there are incredible people supporting those who do end up there. What's it like to work somewhere like that? It feels very much like a vocational job if ever there was one. Margot will also talk to us about how we can all be more informed about these topics, which I'm really looking forward to, particularly as men. These are the conversations we need to be a part of. So make sure you're tuned in, lads. And speaking of lads, be honest, when was the last time you saw your best friends? Are you the person who is trying to get everybody together? Or are you the kind of person who gets a pang of anxiety when you see a message pop into the WhatsApp group saying, anyone around for a get together this weekend? And you're thinking, but I have that bottle of red and 3 episodes of Slow Horses I really want to watch. Well, comedian Bernard O'Shea and my old mucker from the Republic of Telly days has a great piece about middle-aged friendship in his column in the Irish Examiner today, and the things he has learned about them and how to protect them. He talks about the dangers of WhatsApp groups for making us a bit crap when it comes to keeping in touch with our pals. They are, on the surface of it, a great way to keep the connection going. There's no doubt about that. We're still in touch. We have great intentions. But then it just takes an incredibly long time to organise the owl meetup. From the get-go, the enthusiasm is there. Maybe you found this from the lads, we really need to meet up, to the definitely, let's look at dates. But then someone throws a spanner in the WhatsAppery, stalling the plans with hilarious memes and emojis, and no one actually meets up in real life. He also suggests that we be wary of something he calls the "we must meet for a pint" treaty. Irish social diplomacy, he says, has 3 pillars: birth, death, and the solemn agreement to meet someday, meet up for a pint. This phrase, he says, is more binding than marriage vows and less actioned than New Year's gym memberships. It's so true. We just throw that out there. Oh, yeah, how are you getting on? Yeah, great. You're looking well. You busy? Yeah, yeah, flat out. We must meet for a pint. Absolutely. And both of you walk away going, it's never going to happen. He says, when an Irish person says we must get a pint, what they're actually saying is, I love you deeply, but I don't have the time and I cannot emotionally process the passing of time. So let's pretend we'll meet soon. It's so true. But he does point out that when it does actually happen, it can be magical. And we were chatting about this morning, and I think some of the issue is that we get overwhelmed by the amount of friends that we haven't seen in ages. And we tend to group everyone we've ever met since the age of 5 into some vague group in our heads called the lads or the girls. And to find the space to spend quality time with all of the lads or the girls can seem overwhelming sometimes. So we can be sort of frozen. But what I've learned is the amount doesn't really matter. And if you just have time for one close friend, then just do that. Don't let the guilt of not seeing everyone delay you even more from making at least one special connection and reconnecting with somebody maybe after a few years, because you feel so brilliant after it, don't you? I'd love to know what you think. 51551, these little meetups we have with our pals, because there's nothing like an old pal, is there? I mean, you laugh differently. There's less effort to just fill the spaces. The whole conversation is just less effort, isn't it? It's just smoother. And to be that relaxed in someone's company,
I think, is just healing. I always feel better after it. And yesterday, in fact, I met one of my oldest pals for lunch. And those meetings have actually become one of my non-negotiables. The older I get, I realize this is not a luxury item. This is something I have to put into my diary with the same enthusiasm that I do meetings and work things and stuff for other people that our diaries tend to be full of. So I have to, this is a non-negotiable. Putting my old pals in there is really important to me. And I have to do it regularly because they do so much for me. Although if you do want to reconnect with old friends, make sure you pick the right place. Yesterday, myself and my pal, we chose a cafe with the world's worst acoustics where we couldn't hear each other over the racket of clanging cutlery, talking and screeching chairs. So we found ourselves roaring across the table at each other. I find I have to get up in the night to go to the toilet now. Do you find that too? So be sure that you pick the environment where you can have those private catch-ups without everybody hearing your business. So go on, everybody. Send that text, send that WhatsApp message today and actually go for that elusive pint that Bernard O'Shea is talking about in the paper today. Or coffee, or whatever you're having yourself, because those relationships are golden and do loads of things for us that we don't realise. How important is your pet to you and your family? If you're like my house and my family, I'm pretty sure if it came down to a choice between me, our buddy the dog, I would be packing my bags fairly sharpish. Well, if your beloved pet died, would you jump at the chance to bring them back? Well, that's just what a well-known sports star has done. I'm pretty sure Tom Brady, you know the name, he's a seven-time Super Bowl victor in the States, of course. So one of the biggest names in American football and a man who definitely has a loyalty card for his local plastic surgeon, if you saw him on Irish telly recently. Was it the Late Late Show he was on? Yeah, he was on the Late Late. Well, he's been speaking the last few days about the newest addition to his family, who it turns out is not new at all. Tom Brady and his wife, Gisele Bündchen, who I'm right in thinking that she was a former model, Giselle. Yeah, she's a former supermodel. Anyway, they had a family puppy called Lua, who very sadly died back in 2023. She was a pit bull mix, and you can see from the way they spoke about her that she was a huge part of their lives, as pets tend to be. So a few years ago, Tom invested in a cloning company called Colossal. Now, you might remember this company because they recently were in the news. They were bringing back long extinct dire wolves, and we're working on woolly mammoths and dodos. That's what they're working on at the moment. Who knows? Maybe they could bring back winning streak. I'll send them an email after the show. Anyway, before Lua died, Tom and Colossal took a sample of her blood, and with that, they were able to clone the dog. So Tom and Gisele have now welcomed Junie into the family. So they didn't call Lua again, but it is an exact clone of their former dog, Lua. It feels quite medical and scientific, I agree. But Tom said that his family considers Junie, the new version, not a scientific experiment, but part of our family. So we were having a look ourselves, a little chat this morning, and the basic science of this cloning is that they take an egg, they remove all of its DNA and then replace it with the pet's DNA. Scientists encourage the cell then to start splitting until it becomes a viable embryo, and then it's carried to term by a surrogate and is born as a baby again. No, I don't understand it properly either, and I do feel like I'm back in biology class again. But if you're curious and think you would do anything to bring back precious little Rex, then you should know that cloning your dog could set you back between $50,000 and $85,000, so about 75 grand in our money. It is a lot of money, but I guess, you know, if you're a celeb of this caliber and you have a lot of cash, then I guess it isn't very much to them to bring back your beloved pet. You also have to ask how long until the tech moves on. How long before this is a viable option for humans we wish were still around and we start to enter into that whole murky world of ethics? Should we all be collecting vials of blood from our partners to have them forever? And we were chatting about it in the office this morning. We're like, oh, God, yeah, wouldn't that be amazing? But then we all realised that bringing back a loved one as a clone could sound amazing until you realise you'd then have to raise them from a baby. if you did it, you wouldn't just get them at age, whatever, 50 or 45 or whatever. They would be a baby. Like, we all love our partners, but do we really want to raise them as children? It might kill the spark, you know. I love you so much, darling. Now eat up all your num-nums. It's not particularly romantic. Although someone on the team did suggest that it could be a good opportunity to eradicate some of our partner's most annoying habits. If you had them as a baby, you could then start from scratch. You could get in there and nip those annoying traits in the bud before they develop. You know, you could be there with your partner slash toddler saying, you see, this is how we pick our socks up off the floor. Look, the dishes go into the dishwasher, not beside it. I think when it comes to our partners, rather than cloning, a lot of you might be a bigger fan of actually just swapping out the old one for a newer model. You can let us know what you think. 51551 or 0870 32 32 32 for WhatsApps. Now, tonight there's going to be more telly anguish for people as the Celebrity Traitors on the BBC draws to a close. It's the biggest TV show of the year in Britain and is also rating very well here with viewers keen to get a traitor's fix after the end of the Irish one, which of course we all loved. Remember Paddy? We loved it, and a lot of people have withdrawal symptoms, so that's why they've been jumping in their droves to see the Celebrity Traitors show on the BBC. Interestingly though, former England soccer manager Gareth Southgate has revealed the secret key to this strong bond forged by his team. They spent their downtime playing the traitors. It actually helped bond them as players. He said his squad would often organise their own version of the game at tournaments and claimed it was among the most effective team building exercises during his 8 years in charge of the side that he saw. That's really interesting, isn't it? And also speaks to just how bored athletes and footballers get when they're hanging around hotels waiting for things to happen. In his memoir, that's where he's talking about it, Dear England, it's published today, Southgate says the craze for playing Werewolf, the social deduction game which helped to inspire the Traitors show, it began at the Qatar World Cup in 2022 with the squad playing, squad player Connor Cody introducing the game to his teammates. And he says some took to the game incredibly seriously, with notes being slid under people's doors at night, with one player, Mark Gay, whose father was a church minister, anguishing about having to lie if he was made a traitor, which I think a lot of us would. Some of us just aren't good liars. So the final is on tonight at BBC, and Alan Carr is definitely not a good liar. Or maybe he is. We'll let you work it out. But he may not have helped his chances of winning at the end of the last episode. Host Claudia Winkleman, who's very good actually, asked each of the finalists, including two traitors, to look each other in the eye and say, I am a faithful. Here is how traitor Alan got on.
Alan.
I am a faithful.
I am a faithful. I just get nervous.
Oh, Alan. Sorry, I am a faithful.
Thank you.
No, I'm not having it.
I am.
That is just another confirmation of what I'm thinking already about Alan. He can't even look us in the eyes and say, I'm a faithful. If that's not a red flag, I don't know what is.
Maybe you're like me and you're thinking, if that was me, I would absolutely burst out laughing. I am one of those people in a nervous, tense situation will just start to grin. I'll start to smile. And actually, when I was watching the Irish one, I was really surprised that more people like Alan Carr just didn't just burst out laughing at particularly tense points. Although it could be seen as the double bluff, you know. But that was Joe Marler there reacting to Alan's giggle. The former rugby star has been a breakout star of the show. He was the main driver behind uncovering big dog traitor Jonathan Ross last week. So tonight we'll see if he can catch Alan Carr and Cat Burns. And you can let us know if you've been following the British version of Traitors, the Celebrity Traitors. 51551 0870 32 32 32, to get your thoughts into us on those things or anything else that pops into your wonderful heads. We were trying to find a song that would suit the Traitors, and I think, you know what, we couldn't find one actually called the Traitors, but we went with The Killers and All These Things That I've Done. Good morning, everybody.